Sandra Day O'Connor was the first woman to serve on the United States Supreme Court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the second. O'Connor joined the court in a decade far back in the mists of time, the 1980s. Ginsburg joined her in the 90s. They were appointed by presidents from different parties but served together. And a book on their experience is called Sisters-in-Law. Author Linda Hirschman spoke with NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
Sandra Day O'Connor, raised on a Western ranch, a lifelong Republican who cut her political teeth as majority leader of the Arizona Senate, was named to the court by President Reagan in 1981. 12 years later, President Clinton put Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court. Born and bred in Brooklyn, daughter of a Russian Jewish immigrant, she was a professor, a litigator, and the architect of the legal battle for women's rights. But as different as their backgrounds were, and even their approaches to judging, when it came to women's rights, they were allies. Linda Hirschman opens her book on June 26, 1996. Justice Ginsburg announces the opinion for the court declaring that the Virginia Military Institute, an all-male institution since before the Civil War, must admit qualified women. Taking her eyes off the text she's reading, she looks down the bench at her female colleague, and she quotes from O'Connor's narrower opinion 14 years earlier on the subject of sex-segregated public universities.
As this court said some 14 years ago, state actors may not close entrance gates based on fixed notions concerning the roles and abilities of males and females.
As it happens, the VMI case, the jewel in the crown of Ginsburg majority opinions, written less than 3 years into her tenure, would not have been hers to write but for O'Connor. As is the custom, the senior justice in the majority had assigned O'Connor to write the opinion. But in a moment of great generosity, O'Connor demurred, saying, "This should be Ruth's." As author Hirschman puts it, every woman in America was in that courtroom on that June day when the VMI case was announced.
Whether you were a Supreme Court lawyer or a stay-at-home mom, pro-choice or pro-life, single or married, on that day, these women changed your life. And so, of course, changed the lives of men as well.
O'Connor and Ginsburg each had traversed quite a journey before coming to the court. They began their careers at a time when women could be denied jobs, credit, even a place on a jury. But they always had an amazing self-confidence, believing that they could be lawyers and leaders. How did they get that self-confidence? Hirschman tells two stories. The first is O'Connor, at age 15, driving a truck across her parents' enormous ranch to deliver lunch to the ranch hands, when she gets a flat tire and changes it by jumping on the lug wrench until it finally loosens the lug nuts. But when she gets to the roundup, her father is angry, telling her, "You should have started earlier."
So she took the lesson that she had to just suck it up and take whatever abuse the world handed out without complaining. It was a very good training for being the first woman on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Indeed, writes Hirschman, O'Connor was the perfect first, able to get along in an all-male institution without causing problems. Ginsburg, one of 9 women in a Harvard Law School class of nearly 600, found herself being told by the dean at a dinner that she was, quote, taking the place of a man. Decades later, when she was nominated to the Supreme Court, one of her law school classmates regaled his Rotary Club pals, telling them what some had called her in law school.
And when Ginsburg heard that this man had reported that her nickname at Harvard was Bitch, she looked up and said, "Better Bitch than Mouse."
So profound and accepted was sex discrimination back then that getting a job was monumentally hard for both women, despite the fact that both had graduated at the top of their classes. O'Connor got a job by offering to work for free at the beginning, and Ginsburg, though recommended for a Supreme Court clerkship, was rejected explicitly because of her gender and went into academia, hiding her pregnancy to get tenure. In short, whatever they had to do, they did. Then, in 1980, Ronald Reagan campaigned on a pledge of appointing a woman to the Supreme Court. And though his aides tried to talk him out of it, he persisted until he laid eyes on State Appellate Judge Sandra Day O'Connor, a fellow Westerner for whom he felt an immediate affinity. the path for Ginsburg was more difficult. President Clinton wasn't interested in Ginsburg, saying he'd heard she was a cold fish. But after meeting her, Clinton was totally smitten and told his counsel, Bernard Nussbaum, that he'd made up his mind but wanted to watch the Arkansas basketball game before calling her. Nussbaum, nonetheless, phoned Ginsburg.
And he said to her, "Don't go to bed early." And Nussbaum says he heard her start to cry.
Once on the court together, the two women were not friends in the sense that they went shoe shopping together or to the movies with their spouses, but they were allies for the next 12 years. O'Connor's last sex discrimination opinion before retiring declared that a girls' high school athletic coach who was fired after complaining about unequal facilities for women could sue for sex discrimination.
Retaliating against a person because that person has complained of sex discrimination is a form of intentional sex discrimination.
The vote was 5-4, and the more conservative court that followed has begun to eat away at that ruling, in part because O'Connor left some holes that could be exploited later. Hirschman sees O'Connor as less strategic.
Sandra Day O'Connor did not have a clear legal philosophy. So when she makes social change, she does it one agonizing molecule at a time. Ginsburg sees the big picture, and when she makes social change, she may do it in a slow and orderly way, but each change is clearly a cog in a wheel that she's going to then roll toward equality.
Hirschman ends her book with a chapter calling them both our heroines, O'Connor for being the perfect first, Ginsburg for her razor-sharp intellect and far-sighted strategy, and both for solidifying a body of women's rights law that cannot easily be reversed. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.